God's name, do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham. Mark
Latham. And the New South Wales leader of One Nation, Mark Latham, joins me this afternoon. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. Good to be with you.
Likewise.
Back on a Thursday, our regular slot.
Mark, can I just share with you that I can finally admit I fell asleep in the middle of a Parliament session.
Did you?
Last night. In fact, I was doing some prep for the show and I saw one of your tweets and you were referring to something you were discussing earlier in the evening, and you left a link there as part of your tweet to go through to the live feed for the Upper House. So I clicked on that link and all of a sudden there up in front of me is the live feed from the Upper House. It was around about 10:30, I think it was.
Yeah, that's when they finish up. You've caught the tail end of the adjournment debate. Well, I'm relieved to hear that I didn't send you.
No.
I wasn't in the adjournment. They were, it was others.
They were actually talking about, when I got there, they were actually talking about the trail bike track that in Orange.
Yes.
That's what they were discussing.
Yes. And, yep. Mount Kenobolas.
That's the one.
Yep.
And Mount
yep.
Panorama, et cetera. Yeah.
That's it, yep. Greens and Environment Ministers have stopped sensible recreational use of those areas, which seems ridiculous. But, well, it sent you to sleep. Well, Brent, we do say in our chamber, one of our great services to the state is to help with insomniacs.
Ah, dear. I just got a bit of a giggle about it. I thought I'd share it with you.
Yeah, well, it was good to know you were watching, and better to know you didn't fall asleep while I was talking.
No, I wasn't falling asleep while you were talking. How dare I? Let's talk about someone that would send us all to sleep, I think, and that would be Matt Keane. Look, I've been giving Matt Keane a hard time across the week, and I offered people yesterday and the day before and today, for that matter, if you're listening and you'd like to call in and support Matt Keane, you're a supporter, you've got an opportunity. I'll put you to air. You can say what you want. If you want to send me an email, please send me an email. I will read the email out if you are a supporter of Matt Keane. Can I tell you, in the last 3 days, I've had no phone calls. I've had 3 emails supporting Matt Keane. The rest have been just, you know, disparaging, discouraging, distasteful, you name it. People don't like him.
No, they don't. He's taken the Liberal Party out to the far left of politics. But the other thing about him, you can judge his record on some of the promises he made. Like 2 years ago, he promised with his green energy reforms they'd bring down power bills by $115 a year for households, $415 for small businesses. Well, you know, how's that going? The prices have gone in the exact opposite direction. So there's a lot of promises he's made that haven't been fulfilled. And I suppose the great danger on his energy record is he brought forward the closure of Eraring Power Station, so many hundreds of people will lose their jobs there in 2025 because of Matt Keane. And there's no evidence that what he's doing with the power grid is going to keep the lights on after the closure of Eraring. So when you're actually causing trouble for the state, you're breaking your promises and your track record doesn't stack up, combined with the woke left-wing agenda that he runs, even though he says he's from the Liberal Party, there's a lot of good reasons for people to think he's very hard to support.
Can I ask you, look, he was asked on radio this morning whether he would, basically put his hand up for the Premier's job. Of course he'd put his hand up for the Premier's job. He'd love the Premier's job. But do you think he will challenge the Premier before March next year? Or do you think that Dominic Perrottet is safe in that role until the election? There's still 7 months to go.
Well, the government's had a meltdown badly over the past 2 months with the Barilaro matter and Eleni Petinos back in the news today. So they've had scandal after scandal. They've basically not had a trouble-free day for a couple of months. And Perrottet is yet to outline a new positive agenda for the state going forward. How would he fix up our schools, country hospitals, the energy system, all those issues that I just mentioned. Perrottet has done 10 months of crisis management, and the recent crises have got the better of him. So he looks in trouble. A lot of these things are driven by events, but also perception. If there was an opinion poll today about the next election, I'd expect, Brent, that it's probably at least 56-44 in favour of Labor. Mm-hmm. And Chris Minns looking like he's a shoo-in to be the Premier. So at the point where the Liberal Party would think that Perrottet is taking them to a heavy defeat and they need to save the furniture, save some of their safer seats, that might be the point where Matt Keane makes a challenge. One thing I wouldn't rely on is Matt Keane saying that he's hopelessly devoted to Tom Perrottet and loves him and will never challenge. That's the sort of thing that Matt Keane would say, but it's a long way from the truth.
Okay, little crystal ball here. If that was to happen, if Perrottet was to lose the premiership before the election next year and Keane was to take over, surely with the 56, the figure that you were talking about, 56-44, that would, you know, I just... From what I get is feedback from people on the phones, and I just can't see the Liberals winning in March next year, no matter who is their Premier. If Keane is the Premier, does that mean he would have to, once defeated, if he was the leader at the time of the election, Mark, does that mean he has to step down? People would want him to step down, or do you think he would come back and say, well, look, I really wasn't given the opportunity, enough time to do the job properly, so I'm going to stay on as leader? Or do you think it would be, you know, we'd start to see Matt Keane fade into the background?
Probably that option where he'd say, I didn't have a lot of time, and stick with me as opposition leader.
Sure. Okay.
That's probably the most likely scenario, because what's the alternative to Matt Keane? I mean, they've been through this government over 12 years so far. O'Farrell, Baird, Berejiklian, Perrottet, and if they go to Keane, that's five leaders in 12 years. Who else have they got? Stuart Ayres, the former deputy leader, he's gone to the backbench in disgrace. They're starting to narrow the gene pool right down to just a couple of people that are, you know, known in the public arena. So they've got that problem, and they've got the problem of asking the people of New South Wales for 16 years. You know, they've been in for 12. You've got this litany of problems. Asking for 16 is a pretty big ask. So I think it's likely, you know, I've had to put money on it. I think Keane will challenge Perrottet at some stage, unbelievably inside their party, because they're all woke lefties these days, so-called moderate liberals. He's probably got the numbers to take over from Perrottet. In fact, he delivered the numbers to Perrottet when he took over from Berejiklian. So Keane is kind of their factional ringmaster. And it may be that if he took over as Premier, things would be worse for them. You know, you can get worse than 56-44.
You can, yes.
And there wouldn't be many genuine Conservatives out there who supported the party of Howard Costello and Nick Greiner who would vote for Matt Keane.
Okay, now, Coalition Senator Jacinta Price has urged this Peter Fitzsimons to publicly release the audio of their recent phone interview, during which she claims she felt bullied by his aggressive manner towards her. This continues today, I believe, in one of the stories I saw today. We've now seen copies of text messages that went between the pair on Sunday afternoon. Where will this end?
Well, it's a big call for Jacinta Price, an Indigenous woman from Alice Springs, to say that Peter Fitzsimons got aggressive towards her and bullied her. She's calling on him to release the tape of the interview where she says he raised his voice and went over the top. Fitzsimons, you know, one of these lefty, woke journalists, has been running an agenda about respect for women. Well, you know, he'd be damned as a hypocrite that, having said respect for women, and then he's trying to shout over an Indigenous female senator, Jacinta Price. So where will it end? There's no sign of Peter Fitzsimons releasing the tape, which I think in public opinion might go against him. They'd say, if you've got nothing to hide and you reckon you haven't done anything wrong, release the tape. Mm-hmm. It was an interview for a newspaper, so it's kind of a public document. Release the tape and we can find out the actual truth. So at this stage, I think Peter Fitzsimons looks like he's in the wrong. That would be the opinion publicly. He's going to have to try and do something about that, and maybe his newspaper might take some action. Maybe the editor of the newspaper should listen to the tape and make a statement and let us know the truth. Did he shout and yell over Jacinta Price? Did he show disrespect to a woman?
He, as in Peter Fitzsimons, insists that the hour-long interview between the pair was conducted in an engaged, pleasant manner, and claims of him bullying the politician are simply not true, he said.
Well, release the tape. She says one thing, he says something different. Release the tape, or at least play the tape to some independent people, the editor and media watch at the ABC, say they want to listen to it and pass judgment. Maybe some other people, the media editor at the Australian newspaper, could listen to it. If Fitzsimons has got nothing to hide, why not just put the tape out there and let everyone make a judgment?
Very true. We won't hold our breath, though.
No, we won't. We won't indeed. He's a funny old character, the red pirate there with his red bandana.
Oh, he is, isn't he?
You know, he's supposed to respect women, and it's a serious allegation against him.
Okay, New South Wales government has abandoned the 2022 school targets and reporting to parents. Why has this happened, Mark?
Well, I've just spoken in the parliament about it because around two-thirds of the schools weren't going to meet their HSE targets, and two-thirds of the schools this year weren't going to reach their literacy and numeracy NAPLAN targets. So rather than admit to failure, the government's decided to abolish the targets for this year and postpone them till after the March 2023 election. And unfortunately, they're also winding up some of the targets, manipulating others. You know, this was a government that said it's going to be serious about holding schools to account, that obviously we've got some very good schools getting strong results, but we're going to put out the results and the performance targets of the failing schools and do something about them. Well, because it's politically embarrassing, the Minister Sarah Mitchell has postponed any of this data. It keeps parents and, to some extent, students in the dark, and I just think that's the wrong thing for the education system. Whether or not there's an election coming up, we've got to make sure that failing schools are corrected, improved, and that we don't have any tolerance of schools that are failing their students. So I think it's really poor form by Sarah Mitchell to blame COVID. She blames COVID for everything. But the truth is, in the cabinet documents that I revealed in Parliament, the schools are going backwards, and she doesn't want to be accountable for that.
Okay. Now, the story today in The Telegraph, I think it was in yesterday as well, or last night, certainly on the internet, your staff didn't take part in a parliament-wide review into sexual harassment, bullying and misconduct. You say it's a waste of money, and because getting offended is a choice.
Well, it is. You know, you can choose to be offended or you can choose not to be. And it was a funny process here in New South Wales because there was all that publicity about Canberra Parliament House, and I've worked in both places, and I can tell you Canberra Parliament House is completely different to New South Wales. Here in Macquarie Street, it's not like a boarding school in an artificial capital. Most of the MPs and staff go home to their families at night, so you know they have a normal family existence away from the workplace. So I find there's no great bundle of problems in Macquarie Street, but they decided because Canberra had problems, they'd pay a consultant a huge amount of money, well over $100,000 in total costs for this project, to do a review of the workplace here. The report will be released tomorrow. Undoubtedly, it will say everything's terrible, that it's a toxic workplace and everyone's got to undergo training run by other consultants to make more money for themselves. That's the cycle you get in. And I just think that is a waste of taxpayers' money. And every MP, I mean, if you elect someone to be a Member of Parliament, they're individually responsible for their own office and should be held to account for any problems. Like Eleni Pettinos, the former Minister for Fair Trading and Small Business, she's resigned because of allegations. Well, that's how you deal with it one by one. But that's one MP out of 135, and it kind of lets the Member of Parliament off the hook to say that it's all going to be handled now by consultants and a complaints officer, when we really didn't identify any substantial problems in the first place. It was a case of look at Canberra and monkey see, monkey do.
Give me, if you can, an example, because you obviously worked very closely with Gough Whitlam, and you wrote in the, I saw it in the article last night that I was referring to, you gave him as an example for someone that used to, write go off the deep end in a big way, but then he'd turn around and, you know, give you a big cuddle and say you were right.
Yeah, I worked for Bob Carr, who wasn't as volcanic as Gough, but Bob would have his moments. And look, people in political leadership positions that work long hours under pressure and they're perfectionists, of course, from time to time they're going to let off steam, lose their temper. But if you're a mature staff member, you would realise, well, that's just them letting off steam for 5 or 10 minutes. They said some things they didn't really mean. And in Gough's case, his reactions were like physical trembling, shaking, grinding his teeth. But then 5 minutes later, he'd come up and say, comrade, what are you working on now? And give you a bit of a hug and say, let's work on that together. And, you know, I was only young, but I think I had the maturity to realise, well, that's just the way he is. He didn't mean what he said, and he's let off a bit of steam. So what? I'm not going to run off to some complaints officer or write to someone in the media complaining about it, saying I've been disrespected. You've just got to, you know, sort of understand that's the work environment. It means nothing, and there's more substantial things to attend to thereafter. So just move on. Don't choose to be offended. Don't be a sook. Don't be a dobber. Just do your job.
Sadly, we live in a world now of sooks and dobbers, it seems, though.
Unfortunately. Yeah, we do. Yeah. And the younger generation, unfortunately, the snowflake generation, are being accustomed to the idea that nobody can say you're doing the job poorly. Nobody can calmly say to you, look, your work's just not up to scratch. We're going to have to move you on. Apparently that's bullying now. I mean, we're losing objectivity about the quality of work. And I think, potentially, the country can suffer that way. Like, there's some people who do a fantastic job, others a poor job, and you can try and help them and retrain them and improve their work standards. But ultimately, there's some people who just shouldn't be in that job. But apparently to say that these days is an example of workplace bullying. You probably end up in the American pathway where everyone sues everyone for words that are spoken.
Yeah. Just before I let you go, your thoughts on this this COVID Safe app? It came out in the last 24 hours that it cost the taxpayer $21 million, and it was really only successful in identifying 2 positive cases that weren't found by manual contact tracing. That's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It was useless. Was it 2 years ago it was around when COVID first hit?
Yeah,
They rolled out the app. I remember signing up to it. And then worked out it was useless and it wasn't sending me any messages about who had COVID near me, and I just deleted it at that point. So I'm one of many who gave it a chance, but it was always a waste of money, effectively. One of the COVID experiments and overreactions, I suppose, that we've had so many of them, and this was one of the most expensive.
Oh, $21 million. I like what they said, that the app was updated last night. So if you're still...
It was updated.
It was updated, that's right.
But what, it's $10.5 million for every case they identified.
That's what it
was.
Well,
thank goodness they didn't identify a million. It'd send the country even more broke.
But I love the update. Now that it was updated last night, if you open the COVID Safe app on your smartphone, it says now with the update, please uninstall COVID Safe.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, that's government. It's another episode of Yes Minister.
It is. Always good to catch up with you. I'm off next week, so we will we'll catch up in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, look forward to it. All the best.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye.